Good morning again, everybody, and thanks for the opportunity. Is it okay? Okay. Thanks for the opportunity to be with you. I've really enjoyed the weekend in every way. And it's a special interest of mine to excavate the text of the Bible. I'm not going to be talking about the details or the skills of that this morning. I'm just going to do it with Psalm 46. So get that before you. As I tell you about my mother, just a little, my mother is a nice and sweet mom. She's a positive person. I just flew up to Nashville from Dallas, Fort Worth area this past week and surprised her for her 80th birthday. She's not a grouch or a grump, and she's not a complainer. So I was taken back a little recently when I was talking to her in a phone conversation, and she just kind of blurted out in that conversation quite firmly. She said, "The world is so wicked." Well, she's seen a lot of stuff, and I don't know what precipitated that outrage, but she had seen or heard something that reminded her how bad people can be and how evil the world can be. And as I thought about that later, you know, she was right. The world is so wicked. Trouble and turmoil of some kind dominate the news almost every day. Tyrants or terrorists are at work somewhere in the world. If one doesn't show himself today, you just wait. He will. At some time, it may be sooner rather than later. Or at least he'll try to do it. And if it isn't a tyrant or a terrorist, then it's some kind of problem or perversity that dominates our lives. Sometimes we turn a blind eye to that. And we do that, I think, for our own well-being, for our survival. You know, we have to get by. We have to go about life. We have to do our work. But when terrorists invade our space or economic hardship endanger our budget, when the problem hits our hearts and our homes, then we can't ignore it. It's a different matter. We may be agitated, and we may become anxious and afraid. And the psalmist who wrote Psalm 45 knows this. He knows it firsthand. He knows it well. And he lays out a better course for us. So let's see what he says in Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth should change and the mountains slip into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains quake at its swelling pride. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy dwelling places of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She will not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations made an uproar. The kingdoms tottered. He raised his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. Come, behold the works of the Lord, who has wrought desolations in the earth. He makes wars to cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariots with fire. Cease striving and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. I want us to take a look at what the writer says about what I call the slipping and sliding world. Five times. You know, this is a little business of what we've been thinking about these last couple of days. Five times in this relatively short psalm, the psalmist mentions the earth in verses 2, 6, 8, 9, and 10. What happens in the earth or on the earth is obviously in his view. He sees it. He knows it. He feels it. He has experienced it, especially changes and desolations that occur on the earth. He has observed the nature around him, and he is impressed by it. Did you see that he is impressed by the mountains in verses 2 and 3? Those huge, majestic, rugged mounds that point upward into the sky. He also knows about bodies of water on the earth. He knows about free-flowing rivers in verse 4, surging waves in verse 3. He is aware of the host of heaven. He mentions them in verses 7 and 11, the sun, moon, and stars. And take a look at verse 5. He knows how the earth is when morning dawns. So he knows about nature. He is in touch with the fact that the world is living, and there are wonderful and impressive things and sometimes disturbing things in our world. But he not only knows about the world, he knows about people, especially as they form themselves into nations, as he mentions in verses 6 and 10. And he's noticed something about nations, that they often go to war. You know, people get together to use their weapons, such as the bow, spear, and chariots in verse 9. And we could easily translate that into our weapons today. So for the psalmist, the world is not a nice, cozy place. You don't hear him talking about green pastures and quiet waters and right paths, as another psalmist does that we know so well. He speaks of exactly the opposite. He speaks of trouble in verse 1, global changes in verse 2. He thinks about an avalanche, hurricane, and earthquake. He knows the earth exerts its power and people wage war. I think the psalmist would probably agree with my mom that the world is a wicked place. And it's dangerous and sometimes intimidating. We try to make it different than that. We try to make it a safe and secure environment for ourselves and our families. So here's what we do. We pray for safety and we pay for security, right? We pray for safety and we pay for security. We lock our doors and load our guns, bank our money, and we protect our valuables. And there's nothing wrong with these measures. God teaches us to pray, 1 Timothy chapter 2. He says, pray that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. And government is ordained to protect us, to be an avenger of those who bring wrath, and wrath who is avenger and brings wrath upon those who do evil, and to be a servant of good, and to uphold and promote and support those who do good. Romans chapter 13 would be an example of that. But even with all this, with our prayers for security and for safety and our payments for security, we're still exposed to quirks and quacks. Every day, we're exposed to quirks and quacks. The mountains may slip into the sea. The waters may roar. The ground may shake. Criminals may strike. Terrorists may attack. Despite our best efforts to protect ourselves, the world can be a wicked place, both because of nature and because of nations, because of people and because of problems. So where does this leave us? Here we are, the people of God, God-fearing people. What are we to do? What are we to think? How do we manage? How do we survive? How do we go about our business? Do we just accept it all as inevitable and say, well, this is just the way it is, and just throw caution to the wind? Just go ahead and delve into the wickedness of the world. Some people do that. Or should we just live in sheer terror of what might happen next and just lock ourselves in and load our guns and wait for the worst? Well, Psalm 46 does something important for us. It gives us what I call both perspective and principles. It helps us to have a better, richer, mature, effective view. He directs our hearts in a certain way. So here we have our slipping and sliding world. And what does this psalmist talk about? He talks about God, who is our refuge and our strength. Let's look at what he says about God. One big thing he says about God is that God is present. So he has an important point to make about the presence of God. It may seem at times that we are not on God's radar. It may seem that he is not doing anything, and he maybe doesn't even know anything. But the psalmist is emphatic about the fact that he is present. He is with his people. Look at it. Verse 1. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help. A very present help in time of trouble. Look at verse 4. The city envisioned is the city of God. It is the holy habitation of the Most High, according to the English Standard Version. But look at where God is. God is in the midst of her. He is in the midst of her and will help her. The sun and moon and stars are the hosts, and the Lord is the Lord of hosts. But notice what the psalmist says about this Lord of hosts in verse 7 and verse 11. What does he say? You help me. The Lord of hosts is what? With us. The Lord of hosts is with us. There he is present. He is not just the Lord of the sun, moon, and stars. He is the Lord of me and you. And he is the God of this world. He knows what's going on. He has his people in view. It may seem that he is absent or aloof, that he doesn't know or care, but that is not the case. When we step out of our secure places, we must never forget that he is with us, that he is a very present help in time of trouble. And when trouble comes, he may not be so obvious, and we may not feel that he is present, but he is a very present help in time of trouble. Never forget that God is there. If you want that emphasized to you, go to Psalm 139, and you can have that imprinted on your heart even more. But the psalmist says something else about God. Not only is he present, but he presides and protects. He presides and protects and provides. The psalmist invites and encourages us to see that. Look at what he says in verse 8. He says, come, behold the works of the Lord. Come on, let's look at them. He invites us to do that. So let's do it. What may happen to the city of God? Well, the city of God may be reproached or attacked. Evil people may exploit it, invade it, or even destroy it. Look at verse number 5. But God is in the midst of her. She will not be moved. The nations of the world may strut their stuff. You think the nations of the world ever do that? Pride, prejudice, and greed drive nations to war. But you remember this. Psalm 46, verse 6. The nations made an uproar. The kingdoms tottered. He raised his voice, and the earth melted. They may strut their stuff, but God is in control. If any moment we think the captain has left the ship, that the world is spinning out of control, you remember this. That he has wrought desolations in the earth, and he makes wars to cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two, and he burns the chariots with fire. When disasters and dictators appear to dominate the scene, I'll tell you, God is still most high. He is still on his throne. He doesn't always, or he doesn't usually intervene in some direct way. He doesn't redirect every evil act or stop every wicked move. If God did that, we would like it at times, but I'll tell you, we wouldn't like it all the time. And the world would be chaos if that's the way he did, because he has given us free will to exercise in a good way, but that means we also can exercise it in a bad way. So he doesn't redirect every evil act, and he doesn't stop every wicked move. I would not for a moment presume to say what God will and will not do, except what he has revealed in his word. It's presumptuous and arrogant to speak for God. Instead, we need to know and believe that he is present, that he presides, he provides, and he protects. Listen, he is our refuge and strength. He is solid and sure. He is our stronghold, the writer says in chapter verses 7 and 11. He will be exalted among the nations. It may be sooner rather than later, but you mark it down. One day, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. So what must we do? What should our reactions be? I've tried to emphasize that in our studies of excavating the text. It's not just an academic exercise. I think there are some remarkable things in this psalm that I've tried to bring out this morning. But so what? What are we to do about that? What should our reactions be? Especially, I want to talk about the fact of what we're to do when life takes us to the raw edge of reality, when wickedness becomes real and personal. I was talking to somebody this week whose daughter was dealt with in a very horrible way, and he used these words. He's a deep believer And he used these words. He said, it has always been something that happens, but it happens to somebody else. But he said, it happened to me, to my daughter, to our family. When it touches our lives and our homes and our kids, what do we do? What do we do when a deranged person blasts into an elementary school and randomly shoots administrators and teachers and children? And what do we do when seemingly average and ordinary guys leave destructive bombs in public places at a race? What do we do? And what do we do when somebody in our church family is murdered or assaulted? Or when our homes and our hearts are assaulted by evil? What do we do when it's not just something in the newspaper, but it's something in my home or in our heart? Our first response in situations like this tends to be emotional, right? Our first response tends to be emotional. We're grieved. We're angry. We're disgusted. We're outraged. And we can experience all those things at the same time. And I'll tell you, that's okay. God has given us those emotions, and things like that happen, and they kick in. We fight back. We speak impulsively. We might become nauseated. We often then take moves to tighten our security and change procedures or rules or laws. And we might even have some bad things to think about God in the process. Well, all those things may occur, but I'm suggesting to us that they need to occur quickly, and we need to move on with our minds to something else. We must not allow just our emotions to dominate the scene. We must take our minds and think about what this psalm says. I want you to notice something that happens in Psalm 46. And that is, he shifts in verse 10 to the first person. And in fact, he allows God to speak. The psalmist had been speaking up until that time. The nations make an uproar. The Lord of hosts is with us. Come behold the works of the Lord. But in verse 10, he speaks, and he lets God do the speaking. Cease striving and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. What he says is that we must react with our minds. We must respond with our minds as well as our emotions. We must act on what we know. God says, know that I am God. Cease striving and know that I am God. Now, listen. He doesn't say, cease striving because everything's going to work out. It might not. I'll tell you, it might not. Things may be bad. Innocent people may be hurt. My family may be disrupted and damaged. He does not say, cease striving because everything's going to be okay. He says, cease striving because you know that God is God. Knowing God is better than knowing outcomes. You want to write down a little quote? There's a good one. Knowing God is better than knowing outcomes. He presides and He provides. He is our refuge and strength. He is with us. He is a very present help in trouble. The word cease striving is a very graphic word. And it is a word that literally means let your arms down to your side. Let your arms down to your side. I want to give a little demonstration of this. David, would you come up and help me with my illustration? Can you black that for us? Now, I need you to take your jacket off there just a moment. And if David is going to show us how strong he is, what is he going to do with his arm? If you want to show us how strong you are, what might you do with your arm? With your arm? Okay. You got to flex it, right? Okay. Yeah, pretty good. Now, if you want to protect yourself, look at me. If you want to protect yourself, and I'm about to hit you, what are you going to do? Okay, you're going to use your arm. If you're going to fight me, okay, if you want to attack me, what are you going to do? Oh, you're going to use that. Okay, so we use our arms to show our strength, to protect ourselves, and to fight. Okay. Thank you. You can go sit down. So, what is it when we put our arms down to the side? We are vulnerable, right? We are extremely vulnerable. But what God says in this psalm is to put your arms down to your side and let me use my arms. Cease striving and know that I am God. He says he is our refuge and strength. He is our very present help in trouble. We may react first with our emotions. That's understandable and natural. Jesus scourged the money changers at the temple when he saw them. He was upset about that. And when he went to Lazarus' tomb and everybody was crying, what'd he do? He cried too. So to react with emotions is not wrong or bad. But we must quickly move past that to what we know about God. And we must put our arms down to the side and let him use his. Be still and know that I am God. I had a professor in college in biblical studies that gave us a quote of the day. And I wrote them in the top margin of my gray tablet, gray colored tablet, all the time. But there was one of them that I wrote that I didn't have to go back and check, that I remembered it. And I remember it to this day. It was in a class about preaching, how to form sermons and things like that. And the quote was, remember that when you step into the pulpit, every pew contains at least one broken heart. Well, 35 years later, after I've been preaching all this time, I think he's wrong. I think every pew contains probably more than one broken heart. That marriages are in trouble. That kids aren't doing what their parents want them to do. That the bills are more than the balance. That somebody who I love dies an untimely death. A man loses his job. And you can just multiply the problems, difficulties, and disasters that we face. So what do we do? What do we think? What do we believe? What does God offer to our broken hearts, our broken lives? What does he have for our disappointments and our heartaches? Well, what the writer says is that we are to be still and know that God is God. When the mountains slip into the heart of the sea, when the earth quakes, when it looks like disaster is going to just take us down, we need to remember that God is God. And I want us to do that this morning. This is the final thing I want us to do. I want us to spend 3 minutes, doing what God asks us to do. Here's the way we're going to do it. The first minute, we're just going to use the first minute to work through the discomfort of being silent. This is not something we usually do. So I've discovered that the first minute needs to be spent just becoming accustomed to silence and quietness. So let's do that just for 1 minute. And I'll tell you at the beginning that it will seem like it's longer than a minute. Now, what I want us to do in the second minute is that I want us to get everything that is troubling us before us, all the disappointments that you have, the disturbances, the trouble that you know about in the lives of other people who are near you and close to you and whom you love. Get it all before you. Just think about all those things quietly for 1 minute. Now, finally, in the third minute, the final minute, let's think about nothing but God. Think about what the psalm says. He is our refuge and strength, our help in the time of trouble. Think about nothing but God. and decide that all the troubles that you have, you'll give completely to Him. Tried this morning to let the psalm speak and let it say its message, and then to help us do what the psalm calls on us to do. But the psalm is a song, so what we're going to do finally is just remain seated, and Tip's going to lead us in a song that will help us to reinforce what we've just been thinking about and doing. God, be still, my child, be still, for I created all of life. Be still, my child, be still, be still, and know that I am God. Be still, my child, be still. Exalt my name above the earth. Be still, my child, be still. Be still and know that I am God. Be still, my child, be still. For I am watching over you. Be still, my child, be still. If you don't love the Psalms and read the Psalms, I hope I've had something to say that will lead you to do that. They're absolutely remarkable and powerful in themselves. Well, maybe I'm talking to somebody who's not a Christian or has some spiritual need that we can help you with this morning. It is our custom to offer what we call an invitation. It's really the Lord's invitation for anybody whose spiritual need we can help. If you need to be baptized and want to do that today, we'll make arrangements for that. If in some other way you have a spiritual need that we can help you meet, if you'll come to the front, I'll be down here. Philip will be down here, and we'll help you every way we can. Let's stand and sing as we invite for God. All to Him I freely